Right. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the meeting of the Audit Committee on the 16th of June 2022 here in the Coltman Room. Are there any apologies for absence?
We have apologies from Councillor Fitzpatrick and Councillor Gaskin, Chair.
Thank you. Are there any declarations of interest? There are no declarations of interest. So I go on to item three on the agenda, the appointment of vice chairman. As you all are aware, this is my first meeting on the audit committee. I'm very pleased to be here. Councillor Allen invited me, and he said he wanted experience. Well, I've got plenty of bookkeeping and business experience, but I haven't got any experience on this audit committee. So in view of that, I would like to propose that Chris Sylvester remains as vice chairman to support me. Can I have a seconder for that, please? Councillor Hudson, thank you. Are there any other proposals? Can I have a vote then? All those in favour? Thank you. That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chris. Look forward to your help and support. Item four, any urgent business brought forward to the Audit Committee under Rule 12?
There are no urgent business, Chairman.
Thank you, Monica. Item five, a draft Audit Committee training plan, which you should all have received in your notes. I'd like the Chief Accountant to present the report, please, Lisa.
Thank you, Chair. So, a brief introduction, really. You have received in Enclosure 1 a draft Audit Committee training plan. As this is essentially a new committee, it's standard and good practice, and the Council does this, for each new Audit Committee to roll out a programme of training for members. So, for some members this will be new, and for other members it will be refresher training. There's a range of topics proposed with a range of providers, some longer sessions than others, and as you will see, it's proposed that many of the sessions are on Zoom. So on that basis, really, I'm happy to take any questions or comments that members may have.
Councillor Hudson.
Obviously, ideally, it would be best practice for members to attend. If you're not able to attend, we can perhaps look at providing alternative one-to-one sessions if there's a specific time meeting you can't meet.
It may also be possible to see if we can get some sort of bullet point presentation if we ask the presenters nicely.
That's a good option.
Thank you. So is everybody happy with that? Do you feel that's sufficient? Yes? Thank you, Lisa. Much appreciated. We then move on to item six, the external audit plan for the year ending the 31st of March 2022. And I'd like to call on Sarah Jassel to present, please. And welcome to this meeting. Sorry, Sarah.
Thanks very much, Chair. Good evening, everybody. So our paper for the committee today is the audit plan for the 21-22 financial year. I'll take the plan as read, but I will speak to some of the key points on page four of the plan, which is our introduction and headlines section. So the first element on page four is the significant risks that we've identified in respect to the financial statements audit. Significant risks relate to those areas of the audit where special consideration is required in order to address elevated risks of misstatement. The first one of these is the presumed risk of management override of controls, and that is a presumed risk under ISA 240, and therefore it's common to all audits. The second is the risk around the valuation of land and buildings. The valuation is a significant number in the Council's balance sheet, and in addition to that, it's based on judgments and estimates, and therefore there's an elevated inherent risk within that balance. Very similar to that is the valuation of the pension fund net liability. Again, this is a large value in the balance sheet, and it is highly sensitive to the actuarial assumptions made by the actuary, and that underpins the estimated liability. If I jump to the bottom and talk about the value for money arrangements, there are two areas that you'll see that we've flagged under the governance criteria of the value for money framework, and we've identified there may be a risk of significant weakness in arrangements in these two areas. So that means that as we perform our audit procedures on value for money, under the VFM framework, there will be a specific focus on these areas, and that will support our conclusion on whether or not there are any weaknesses or recommendations that we need to report upon. And then jumping back up to the middle of the page, it's our materiality determination, which we have deemed to be just under £1 million for this year based on the prior year gross expenditure for the year. So we will revisit this once we get the 21-22 draft statements to see whether or not this needs to be adjusted. The final point on materiality is that we will only report to the committee if there are any omissions or misstatements which are above our threshold for clearly trivial matters, which is £49,500. So that's a summary of the key headlines that we want to report to the committee. So I'll stop there, but I'll be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Sarah. Are there any questions? I see Councillor Sylvester.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I know every year you're newest chair, but every year we have a problem with the pension valuations. It always holds up the final signing, and pretty well it's the last minute signing, isn't it? We usually have to pass it over to the chairman to sign it with about 2 days to go. Is there any way we're going to avoid that this time?
My current information is that the pension fund auditor won't be able to provide the assurances we need by the end of September. Unfortunately, but that's outside of our control and the finance team's control. Yeah, it's a Staffordshire-wide issue.
Councillor Chowdhury.
Thank you, Chair. My question is around how do you choose the topics to be looked at? You've got those as listed in there. And secondly, do we need to look at Towns Fund? Obviously, there's a significant amount of money which is going to be administered through the council as accountable body through external partners. And obviously, it's a big risk to the council if it doesn't go right. So do we need to do something to make sure that that process, right from the outset, of procurement, awarding the projects and whatever, throughout its delivery is actually taken on board?
So if I start with the last question about the Towns Fund, we will be covering that as part of our value for money work. There's a whole raft of criteria under different headings, and that will put up a picture of the evidence around the governance arrangements for the Towns Fund. As part of that. And the first question was about how we identify the issues. Do you mean in terms of the financial issues or the value for money?
The financial issues. Obviously you picked up the valuation of land, the pensions fund, and then management override of controls. I don't know what that means, but I don't know what that covers. But generally, how do you come up with those amongst host of other things?
We go through quite a detailed assessment of all the different account areas within the financial statements and look at the levels of inherent risk within those transactions and balances to try and determine whether or not there is an elevated risk of misstatement. Common areas for elevated risk would be things that are estimates, which is why the valuation estimates are seen as a significant risk area, because they're very judgmental, they're susceptible to sensitivity in different assumptions which are selected, and that combined with the large value of them means that they are the most risky areas of the statements in terms of ensuring that we've got enough audit evidence to support our audit opinion that there's no material misstatement. Does that answer your question? Okay.
Thank you, Sarah. Councillor Sylvester.
Yeah. In respect of the in respect to the town fund, how will you be looking at? Will you be looking at it from what we spent to date? For instance, in 21-22, there'll only be 200,000 or 300,000, I think it is, spent by the 31st of March. So there won't be a lot to look after that. You'll presumably be looking at that the following year, will you?
Yeah, well, we will look at it in part of our audit for 21-22. I guess the funding will go through the financial statements and we'll look at it from that aspect. In terms of the value for money side, I guess we'll be looking more at the governance aspect of things, and that could also touch on events that have happened in 22-23 as we sort of see the moving picture and reflect that as well.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Hudson.
Yeah, I mean, the town's fund's going to be with us for a number of years, isn't it, Sarah? So I wouldn't expect you to be doing it all in 22-23. It's going to be with us for a few years, so we just need to make sure that each year, until that is completed, that we audit it. So I'm quite happy with that, and I wouldn't expect you to, you know, come up with the magic answer at the end of 22-23. It's something that's going to be with us for quite a few years, till it's completed.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. Any other questions? I think, you know, Councillor Chowdhury, we've got to be content that we're looking at it, they're looking at it, and hopefully at the end of the day everything is, well, not hopefully, we can guarantee that at the end of the day everything is looked into properly. Yes? Yes, certainly, sir.
Sorry, yeah, just to be clear, I'm not expecting the answers here and now. What I'm saying is that it's a whole process. You know, once you spend the money, you spend the money. If you do the audit at the end of it, all you'll get is fair to complete, won't you? You know, it'll be what it'll be. The whole, what I'm trying to say is that I guess that the purpose of this audit is that you audit the process during, hopefully before, to make sure that things, you know, things are watertight. And as you go through, and then obviously, you know, throughout the life cycle of the project. That's what I'm getting at, really. So yes, you don't have to actually spend all the money and then audit it and see if it's gone in the right place or not. It's as you said, you know, it's the governance part at the start, the procurement, and then the delivery, and then at the end of the day, is you got what you intend to do in terms of, you know, what the objectives were. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I think we're saying the same thing, to be honest. Yes, thank you very much. Is that it? On everybody happy? Can I thank Sarah for her report and all the effort that's gone into it? Thank you very much. And with that, move on to item 7, which is the head of our internal audit opinion report. I'd like to call on Mark Watkins and Ruby, please, whichever of you is going to perform. Thank you.
I'll start. Ruby will correct me in a bit. Okay, thank you, Chair. So this is our annual head of audit opinion and also our annual report rolled into one, and the two sort of flow together, to be honest. So under the requirements of the public sector internal audit standards, we are required to provide an overall opinion based on all of our work during the year, which then feeds into the annual governance statement. So it's part of what management will look at when pulling together the annual governance statement. So what does internal audit think about the systems and processes that we've looked at during the year? In summary, I can say that I'm pleased to let you know that we've provided an overall opinion of significant assurance, and that there's been nothing that we have found in our work during the year which we would recommend needed to be highlighted as a significant control issue in the annual governance statement. Just to put a little bit more meat on the bones around that, probably the best thing to do is to look at Appendix one of our report, which provides a summary of everything we've looked at during the year. So our overall significant assurance opinion is based on the fact that we have done 22 pieces of work that contribute towards our assurance opinion, and of those we provided full assurance in 8 of those areas and significant assurance in 14. There were no moderate, limited or no assurance reports during the year. So I think just to sort of put a little bit of context around that, obviously we've come through an extremely challenging time with the COVID pandemic for local authorities generally. So for us to be able to look at those established systems in the main and find that we're able to either provide significant or full assurance during that period is quite an achievement, I think. And it's something that the committee should take some comfort on, that the team, management and the officers have worked very hard to maintain levels of control to an acceptable level during that time. I'm happy to take any questions on that now.
Thank you very much, Mark. Are there any questions for Mark or Ruby? Councillor Hadley.
Thank you, Chair. It says on Appendix 1, It says about the GDPR compliance being significant. Now, I thought, well, GDPR should be either are compliant or you're not. I would just like some elaboration around that, please.
Right, yes. So when we say significant assurance, we're looking at the control environment for GDPR as a whole. If we provide a significant assurance opinion, it means there are some areas that could be improved on, but it doesn't mean that you're non-GDPR compliant. That's how I'd answer that one.
Thank you. Anybody else? I mean, as far as I was concerned, it was a very positive report, and it was nice to see Sarah nodding along as well when he was giving it. That's even more assurance as far as I'm concerned. That's what I want to know. So thank you both very much, and thank you for coming tonight.
Okay. I'm just going to leave Ruby to listen to the rest of the items, if that's okay with you, Chair, and then I'll take my leave.
Right, yes, I'll say thank you very much for coming, and yes, it's a pleasure to have Ruby stay to the end. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, with that, we will move on to item 8, which is the Revenue and Capital Outturn Report, 21-22, quarter 4, and I ask our Chief Accountant, Lisa, to present the report, please.
Thank you, Chair. So, this report covers the draft outturn position for 21-22, covering the revenue and capital budgets, treasury management activities, as well as business rates retention, and a summary of the key corporate and strategic risks facing the authority. The section 4 of the report covers the revenue budget. The approved budget for 21-22 of 13.371 million included a corporate provision of 1.3 million towards COVID-19 pressures, and was balanced by taking into account 1.1 million from reserves. This recognised that there was a high degree of uncertainty and potential volatility within the budget, obviously due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The report highlights that there has been some significant budgetary pressures during the course of the year, particularly in relation to car parking and income within the brewhouse and function service. But also there has been some windfall income streams and savings, including significant uplift in recycling income. This means that after taking into account the corporate budgets, including that COVID-19 provision against expected pressures, there is an overall contribution to reserves for the year of 0.4 million at outturn. Overall, therefore, the outturn for the year is better than was anticipated when the budget was set. This is largely due to the success of the vaccine rollout in terms of reopening the economy and preventing further restrictions or lockdowns. Whilst, of course, the Omicron variant initially seemed to pose a significant threat around quarter three time onwards, that has not materialised. There have also been a number of one-off initiatives and grants provided by government during the course of the year that have resulted in savings, which could not have been anticipated when the budget was set. Paragraph 4.3 and 4.4 of the report set out the most significant variations against the budget for the year. There are a number of carry-forward items for Cabinet to consider, and these are outlined at paragraph 4.6 of the report, and total 111,000. The table at paragraph 4.1 shows that there is a variation against the original budget of 1.5 million. However, 0.7 of that was anticipated when the MTFS for 22-23 was set, and therefore members of Cabinet have been asked to approve the allocation of the remaining windfall sum of just 0.767 million, which is outlined at paragraph 2.8 of the report, which reflects the Council's priorities but also some emerging risks. In terms of Treasury management, this is covered at section 5 of the report. At the end of the financial year, investment stood at 59.4 million, with the average rate of return for the year being 0.1%, which is consistent with most benchmarks. Investment rates during the course of the year were very much in the doldrums, really, in relation to the economic conditions, and for a large part of the year it was a battle against negative rates. A full schedule of investments is attached to Appendix B, which includes a number of deposits with highly rated foreign banks, which adds value and diversification to the portfolio. Obviously, that is very much backward looking. Towards the back end of the year, the economic position has changed quite significantly. So as we move into this current year, we will see a significant uplift in investment rates. As you all know from the news, the Bank of England have been increasing the base rate. So investment returns are significantly improving. And you'll see that in the quarterly reports for the current financial year. In terms of external borrowing, at the end of last financial year, that stood at 11 million, which is broadly consistent with previous reports. And overall, the Treasury management activities were in line with the approved Treasury management strategy. Section 6 of the report covers the capital programme. The report sets out expenditure against a programme of 9.6 million. A number of projects are either ongoing or taking place over several years, and as such it's recommended to Cabinet that 4.6 is approved to be carried forward to enable those projects to continue. And the report also shows indicative allocation of the Towns Fund award, subject to government approval, and the accrued spend to date. The table at paragraph 6.2 highlights a total of £98,000 of funding that is no longer required as those projects are complete, and that resource will be available when the capital programme is refreshed. And then finally, in terms of capital, table 6.4 sets out the capital receipts that have been generated during the course of the year, totalling £228,000. In terms of business rates retention, this is covered at section 4 of the report and does report a large surplus in terms of the business rates retention scheme, in addition to which there is a large sum expected to be repaid back from the Staffordshire pooling arrangement. At this point in time, that's an estimated figure. We have seen, as members are aware, one of the key risks around business rates retention is the rateable value disputes, effectively appeals that are held with the valuation office. And during the course of the year, a large number of the backlog has been cleared by the valuation office. So that has contributed to that significant surplus this year, because obviously we've been able to revise the amount that we need to provide accordingly. And then finally, section 8 of the report covers risk management. Appendix E to the report is a schedule of the most significant corporate strategic risks facing the authority, together with the measures taken to manage these risks. This has been updated since the last quarter, and the risks have been added in terms of the Homes for Ukraine scheme and also supported housing. And then you will have previously recall that there was a risk around Brexit, and this has been expanded to cover the current wider economic and geopolitical concerns. That covers the key points in the report. This obviously will be going to Cabinet for approval in June. I'm happy to take any questions through you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Are there any questions? A very full and comprehensive report that we've all seen and looked through before, so thank you for that. No questions at all. Right, thank you. Move on to item 9, the annual Treasury Management Strategy Report. And again, Lisa, it's up to you.
Thank you, Chair. So members will probably be aware, as this is a cyclical report, that this is one of three statutory Treasury Management reports that come to this committee each year for scrutiny and then go on to full council for approval. So the first one of those is it sets out the Treasury Management Strategy, which usually goes to full council around February time. There's a mid-year update around December, and then this annual report that covers the activity for the year. I suppose a reminder really that in terms of our investments, the council's priority as set out in the code of practice that we are required to follow is the security of our capital, is the paramount consideration, followed by liquidity and then return. So section 4 of the report covers the Treasury management position as at 31st of March, and essentially that covers the information that you've seen already in the quarterly finance report. So core investments stood at 59.4 million, investment returns at 0.1% in line with benchmarks, and a significant amount of the portfolio held fairly short term, linked to the rates available at the time, but also acknowledging that we do have significant funds held and due back to central government or due to be paid out in grants and distributions. So, for example, in March, we received around £6.8 million in the council tax energy rebate grant from government, which was due to be distributed early in the new year. In terms of borrowing, as I've already mentioned in the previous item, external borrowing stood at around £11 million, and that includes accrued interest at year end, with the average interest on that borrowing at 5.4%, which again has not changed since previous years. Section 6.2 of the report shows how investments fluctuated during the course of the year, and by and large that does follow a similar pattern to what you may have seen in previous years, with peaks and troughs. So the peaks tend to be at the start of each month when the council tax and business rates income is received, and then there's a dip towards the, around the 20th of the month, when we're paying out large sums of money to government and the preceptors in relation to council tax and business rates. Cash balances peaked in January time at around 78.6 million, and the average throughout the year was around 63.1 million. And again, that's at enhanced levels due to the scale of reliefs and grants that have been administered during the year, again, largely due to the pandemic. And money's held pending reconciliation and payable back to government. A full schedule of investments held as at 31st of March is shown in Appendix 2 to the report. I'll just move down. In terms of the economy, obviously that is something that's very pivotal in terms of Treasury management activities. And there's a review of the economic activity outlined at Appendix 1 to the report, which provides extensive detail. Clearly, the single most biggest factor was the COVID-19 pandemic, which essentially inflicted worldwide economic damage. However, as you know from the news, etc., the economy has now opened up and back to business as usual. However, the Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee, again, as we've said in the previous item, really, are now focused on tackling inflation. And with interest rate rises in December, February and March of last year, and again, as we've seen into this new year, we've seen further increases. And, the economic forecasts are that that's likely to continue. In terms of Treasury management, Treasury strategy and limits, the approved capital programme for 21-22 included the use of prudential borrowing for the replacement of the Council's fleet of vehicles. It was not envisaged that any external borrowing would need to be undertaken in that regard, and that has indeed been the case. The capital financing requirement, which is our underlying need to borrow, was due to increase due to that prudential borrowing in respect of the fleet, but it was also due to reduce due to planned application of capital receipts as per the approved MTFS. Now, the capital financing requirement is shown in Table 4 on page 5, and whilst that a large part of that prudential borrowing for the fleet acquisition took place, as you know from the previous report, the timing of capital receipts has been very much uncertain, which means that the capital financing requirement is slightly higher at the end of the financial year than was expected, and that's just due to the timing of those capital receipts. In terms of investment expectations or investment return expectations within the original strategy for 2021-22, it was for the bank rate to remain at 0.1% for much of the year, and investment returns to remain close to zero. And it was indeed, for most part of the year, that was the case, and it was only towards the very back end of the year that started to change. So as I've mentioned, on page 6, it shows you the capital the CFR, and it compares that with the external borrowing for the year, showing that the capital financing requirement was just short of 16 million and the external borrowing 11 million. So we were in an underborrowed position, which is more advantageous in the current economic environment, and that we're well within our authorised and operational boundary limits. And then finally, as you all know from the quarterly finance reports, in terms of the Icelandic deposits, the administration process in relation to the remaining Icelandic investment, KSF, was finalised during the course of 21-22. So we can draw a line under that now. And the final recovery was 87.03%, which was in line with the expectations and the amounts that we'd factored into our accounts. So there's no significant issue there at all. So the recommendation really for this committee is for the committee to review the report and make any observations or comments that they may see fit to full council. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Have we got any reviews or comments on that report to send to full council? Any questions? Everybody content? Yes, thank you very much. I mean, it's a very comprehensive report and, you know, it's understandable there aren't any questions on it if everybody's content with it. So thank you very much. If that's the case, we will move on to item 10, the governance report. And I'd like to ask the head of service, Sal Khan, to present, please.
Thank you, Chair. So in terms of some background, this is a document that's prepared annually. And it looks back at the governance arrangements in the previous year. So we're looking at 2021-22, and it's a statutory requirement that this document is published with the statements of accounts. So the format is pretty standard, and as per last year, the statement is split into six sections. Section one discusses and references the scope of responsibility, and section two looks at the purpose of the governance framework. Section 3 itself describes what the framework is and how we operate with a number of systems and processes that comprise a governance arrangement. So this explains the systems, and this includes formation of objectives in the corporate plan, how our policies are formed and then scrutinised, the roles of the various committees that we have, the roles of members and the statutory officers, the role of internal audit within the organisation, risk management, project management, the financial controls that we have, and then sort of references performance management and benchmarking. The big section is section four, which is the review of effectiveness of our arrangements. And this provides a number of examples of how the effectiveness has been reviewed. And these include things like the review of the council's constitution, the review of various policies and the introduction of some new strategies, and a number of these are listed within the governance statements. There's the continued operation of clear policy and decision making through cabinets and through regulatory committees, with the ability to review and challenge these through scrutiny committees. There's reference to the formal audit reports that come through to audit committee. There's the quarterly performance and financial reports. There are internal and external audit reviews, and of course we have our scrutiny committees and the reviews that they conduct during the year, and a number of scrutiny reviews that have been undertaken or commenced is also provided within the statement. There's a section which references the comprehensive review of the council's committee structures, which were undertaken during the year, and amongst other changes it resulted in the formation of three new scrutiny committees and a separate audit committee which reflects best practice. There's the reference to the ledger operating contracts and the partnership board that's changed by the relevant deputy leader. There's reference to the outcome of the Local Government Association Corporate Peer Challenge, which took place in December 2021. There's a section which references the steps we took prior to the submission of a Thames Fund programme to government in March 2022. That details the journey through scrutiny, cabinet and council twice. There's a section on the approach to setting the MTFS and the risks that are associated with the ongoing uncertainty surrounding COVID-19 and the general economy, as well as making reference to things like member briefings and training, the project management approach we have, and the meetings that we have with external auditors, etc. There's also reference to the SIFA Financial Management Code, and we will be carrying out a detailed evaluation during the course of this year. Section 5 references the impacts of COVID-19, and there's some examples there in how the council has continued to respond to the COVID-19 pandemic, which include collaborative working that's been undertaken, the administration of various grants, and the council's contribution to the recovery phase. In terms of Section 6, which is basically the conclusion, I'm pleased to conclude there are no significant governance issues to report. There's a reference that we've made to ongoing monitoring of the impact of COVID-19, to monitor our compliance of the FM code, and to respond to the findings from the corporate peer challenge. You've seen earlier on this evening that was the internal audit report that's provided significant assurance, and that's helped to provide for me to sort of come to this conclusion. And the recommendation is that the audit committee approve the statement, Chair. Through you, take any questions.
Thank you, Sal. Are there any questions? It seemed a fairly clear and straightforward governance statement. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It says it has to be signed by the leading member on behalf of his staff. That's the
so it's signed by the chief executive and the leader of the council when it goes within statement of accounts.
And if we don't put forward any objections to it, that goes towards that as well. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Do I have a seconder for that? Thank you. All those in favour that we approve it? Thank you very much. That's unanimous. That is excellent. Oh, I've switched myself off. Without further ado then, I come on to... I thank you all for tonight's attendance, especially our visitors from the audit, for coming and explaining what they've done. The officers for all the work they put in, for you councillors for turning up tonight as well, and for one of the deputy leaders to sit, or the deputy leader to sit at the back and listen to us. So without further ado, I'll move on to item 11, which is the date of the next meeting set for the 29th of September 2022. And with that, I close the meeting and thank you all very much.